Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This episode of Groundwire was produced on the traditional territories of the Mississaugas of the New Credit by the Groundwire National Coordination Team. I'm your host, Ome Salma Rahimtula. In this episode,
we are standing with our people and families in our motherland in the greater Syria.
And what they're doing in Gaza, bombing peaceful people.
This community is about 200 years old. There's no recorded flood history ever.
Students have been pushing back against professors engaging in sexual misconduct for years.
But first, here are the headlines. Our first headline comes from Michael Welsh at CKUW in Winnipeg, Manitoba, on occupied Anishinaabe territory on the homeland of the Métis Nation. On Wednesday, April 18th, volunteers hit the streets of Winnipeg to gather information over a 24-hour period about the extent and nature of homelessness in the Prairie City. The data collected is intended to not only track progress on ending homelessness over time, but also to improve decision-making for funders, governments, and community organizations addressing the needs of Winnipeg's most vulnerable. This is the second Winnipeg Street Census following the one conducted in 2015. Christina Mays Nino is an animator with the Social Planning Council of Winnipeg, which is coordinating the project.
Those numbers are indicators, and they're important indicators of what's happening in our community. And they give us data like in 2015, we found that about 49% of people experiencing homelessness have been in the care of Child and Family Services. Those types of numbers, I think, are more important than the overall like 1,400 people on a given day are experiencing homelessness. Because it allows us to go to Child and Family Services, who already have a pretty good sense that this is happening, but still to give them that number can sometimes sort of shock them into political action, which is really important.
Street census organizers intend to release the initial findings on June 12th in Winnipeg's Thunderbird House, with a final report to be released in early September. Our final headline comes from CKUT in Montreal, reporting from the PHAS Action with Autism Montreal.
Wednesday, April 11th, marked the sixth action of the mobilization campaign called We Are and We Want. Organized by the Mouvement PHAS, Personnes Handicapées pour l'Accès aux Services, in collaboration with Autisme Montréal. The organizations and their supporters staged a symbolic action to demand the end of long waiting lists for health and social services for people with autism spectrum disorder, as well as their families. CKUT's Gary Gay had a chance to attend the action and speak with its organizers.
We want services! Services
for everyone! Services
for everyone!
With this current government right now, what we're witnessing is that rights of the disabled are attempted to be taken away completely. It's not true that there aren't funds there. If they have $1.3 billion that they can give to a private company for investment and planning in the future, such as they did, why can't they correctly fund social services to properly meet the needs of the disabled? If they are not projecting, if they are not planning, if they are not envisaging what's going to happen in terms of growth, right now autism is 1 in 64 in the province of Quebec, and we don't even think that includes everybody, that just includes a subgroup of 5 to 17-year-olds. In the bigger cities, the readaptation centers have gone about doing away with services a little at a time. Socio-professional services, for example, once you're over 21, are actually primarily not even offered anymore in the countryside. They're relegated to the community sector if they service it, if they offer it. So there's a growing trend to take away services. There's a growing trend to deem people undeserving of services, of public funds. These are gains and rights that we've acquired over 40 years ago. It's as if they're being trivialized now.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back after this. You just heard Budapest by Robbie Botos from his album Old School. Welcome back to Groundwire, your source for news from the ground up. Available online at groundwirenews.ca and airing on your community radio station. Now it's time for our feature stories. Gretchen King at CKUT in Montreal reports from the protest opposing the illegal attack on Syria supported by Canada.
In the days after the illegal attack on Syria, led by a coalition of imperial forces, including the USA, France, and the UK, that acted with the approval of Canada, Syrian Montrealers organized a protest downtown near Concordia University to demand hands off Syria. CKUT was there and captured this audio.
Hands off Syria!
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 Hand off Syria!
Hand off Syria!
Mr. Prime Minister, we are here to tell Your Excellency that we are standing with our people and families in our motherland in the greater Syria, that they are threatened by the American arrogance for more than 7 years. Yes, we stand by their side against the unjust American, British and French aggression, and we condemn the attack against our motherland in Syria.
Bruce Katz from Palestinian and Jewish Unity addressed the demonstration to denounce Canada's complicity in the illegal strike in Syria and Canada's silence on the shooting and killing of nonviolent protesters in Palestine by Israel.
Pajou dénonce l'hypocrisie du gouvernement du Canada qui approuve des attaques illégales des États-Unis et ses alliés sur la Syrie en toute absence de preuves et garde le silence concernant les massacres répétés des Palestiniens de Gaza qui manifestent pacifiquement depuis 3 semaines exigeant le droit au retour des réfugiés. Honte au Canada!
Honte au Canada!
Honte au gouvernement Trudeau!
Honte au gouvernement Trudeau!
Complice de la criminalité des États qui attaquent un pays souverain en flagrant délit de droit international. Hands off Syria!
Hands off Syria!
Hands off Syria!
Hands off Syria!
Next year, 2019, there's an election in Canada. I want everybody here to have a long memory and remember the betrayal of Trudeau for international law and against the sovereign state of Syria.
Hands off Syria!
Hands off Syria!
Hand 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 off Syria!
This report was produced for Groundwire by Gretchen King from CKUT Radio in Montreal, broadcasting on unceded Mohawk territory.
Chris Cook from CFUV in Victoria, British Columbia, files the following report from a Victoria demonstration to support the Palestinian March of Return.
It's April 14th. I'm downtown waiting for the Kaya demonstration against the shooting of unarmed demonstrators by the Israeli government. The Palestinian demonstrations are a part of the Great March of Return, so-called. They vow weekly on Fridays to manifest at the wall and barrier in Gaza. So far, reaction by the Israeli authorities has been lethal. 33 dead, at least thousands wounded. So I'm standing here with Larry Hannett. So what is it, Larry? What's going on today?
This is one of the ongoing demonstrations and actions to raise awareness about the Gaza, but with all of the Palestinians. And it's moving up towards the anniversary, the 70th anniversary of the expulsion of 750,000 Palestinians in 1948, which the Palestinians call the Nakba.
Can you tell me your name and what your position is?
My name is Sandra, and my position is Israel is not an apartheid state.
How do you react to what people's criticism of what the Israeli military is doing in shooting unarmed protests.
Oh, that's a higher an exaggeration. You have thousands of people on the other side of the line who are throwing smoke bombs and slingshots and fire bombs and shooting live ammunition.
I haven't seen reports of any injured Israelis at all.
Well, you have the soldiers over there who are being very careful not to be injured. They're keeping away from the border, but they're also being attacked by stones.
Here with Randy Caravaggio, he's at one end of a banner that says "End the occupation of Palestine." Randy, I was just talking to a woman with a counterpoint who says that there's no apartheid, and well, you know the story. I mean,
right. Well, there's no apartheid. Well, I guess if you have roads for Jewish people only, or if you allow Jewish people to build homes in certain areas and you don't allow Palestinians to build, or, you know, you allow people from outside of the country calling themselves Jewish people coming into Israel and then getting the houses that Palestinians live in. If you say that that's not occupation and apartheid, then I don't know what you would call it. It's I don't know what it will take for these folks to get their heads out of the sand and look at the reality and the truth of the situation. But we as a people, standing in solidarity with the Palestinians, and try to stop the human rights abuses that Israeli state is causing, we will continue this until the end.
Can you tell me what your name is and why you're here today?
Marvin Sharp. I'm here because we need to understand and try to educate people on the truth of what's going on in Israel with the Palestinians.
I agree. What is the truth?
Well, the truth is that the Palestinians don't want peace. They want all of Israel. It's all or nothing. That's why they won't sit down. That's why they reneged on every agreement they ever made.
The logic of apartheid, the logic of the conflict, in a nutshell. I'm talking to Terry Wolfwood here. Terry, you've been in the region. You've been to Palestine, and you're getting ready, I understand, to go back again.
Yes, I am. I've been there three times, to Palestine and also Jordan, working with Palestinians there and in Lebanon, and I'll be going back in the fall to Palestine, to the West Bank.
I've been following this for a long time, but what we've seen these last few weeks seems worse.
Well, I think that Israel feels that nobody is going to stop them. Nobody, no government in the world is willing to stop Israel from what they're doing, so they're just letting go. And what they're doing in Gaza, bombing peaceful people who are trying to invoke the right of return, which is Article 13 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that Canada signed on to, which is the right of return of exiles, and we ignore that. And Gaza is essentially an open-air concentration camp because it's surrounded by Israel, and Egypt is controlled by Israel and the United States as well.
Sunday, April 22nd, in Winnipeg, a small group of community members gathered for the 15th annual 7th Generation Walk for Mother Earth. The action typically involves a walk through the downtown area to the forks of the Red and Assiniboine Rivers, where a water ceremony and picnic is held. Speakers at this year's walk included musician and environmental activist David Fort, Jackson Osborne, a speaker from the northern community of Cross Lake, and Carla Williams, a 60s scoop survivor. Suzanne McCrea, who has also been involved with the walk since it started in 2003, introduced the speakers. What follows is some of the audio from the weekend, as recorded by CKUW contributor Michael Welsh.
I don't know if you all know the genesis of how the walk started. It started because three Indigenous women came and asked me and Dave Brophy, the late Dave Brophy, to take on a sacred trust with a walk in Winnipeg. People walked in as far away as from Grassy Narrows. That's like 3.5 hours by car. And families walked all the way in from Grassy together and brought people together from all four directions. This was created as an alternative to the corporate Earth Day, and the people that have been involved in this are people who do this every day. I'm going to hand it over to Dave Fort. I've asked Dave to speak today because he has been out on the front lines of the Muskrat Dam resistance, the Inuit people in Labrador, and there are a lot of parallels between what's going on out there and what has gone on with Manitoba Hydro. We have Jackson Osborne here to talk about Manitoba Hydro. He's here from Pimichickamack. So, and then we also have another speaker, Carla Williams is here, and she's going to talk about the 60s scoop.
Last spring, there's a community called Mud Lake. They were actually flooded. This community is about 200 years old. There's no recorded flood history ever.
Mud Lake had to be completely evacuated last spring. Now Nalcor is kind of like, Nalcor is the company, by the way, that's building all this stuff. So they're saying it's not dangerous, but you should move. When you start pulling people out of their homes, and yeah, maybe, you know, what are they going to get, like $80,000 or something for their house or whatever, they'll probably do some kind of thing like that. That might sound like a lot of money, but now these people are going to the city, buying their groceries, which are supermarked up there, or they're moving to the island where they're not going to get a warm reception and that kind of thing. So you're cutting off a community, and then over time what you're doing is cutting off a language, and what you're doing is cutting off a history, which leads us into concepts of cultural genocide.
I got lots of pictures about environment, about a water, a shoreline, a dead fish, a dead muskrat, a dead beaver, erosion, the falling trees, islands eroding.
He went to school and lived up there, and he said, well, there's a dam upstream, 15 kilometers or 15 to 70 kilometers upstream of across Lake called Chempe. The gates are closed, he says. When the gates are closed, all the water from Cross Lake drains down to Hudson Bay. They never told us what's going to happen to our land, to our territory. They didn't tell us the water's going to fluctuate, there's going to be dead muskrat, dead fish, erosion, burial sites. They never told us nothing. It's good to turn on a light switch, but every time you turn a light switch, it affects nature out there in North America.
Between 1951 and 1991, indigenous children were taken away from their homes, placed in non-indigenous foster homes throughout the years. There was a lot of abuse that was suffered, neglect, and we are suing the government for that. They came up with a deal of $75 million for the lawyers and a lousy $25,000 to $50,000 per child, per survivor. We are opposing that deal. Today I'm here to speak about that and to be part of the hopefully be part of the water walk, because that's part of our heritage that we lost.
Thank you to Michael Welsh from CKUW in Winnipeg for filing that report.
Our final feature comes to us from Gao Mahadevan at CKUT, reporting on a student walkout organized by both Concordia and McGill University students to denounce the way both universities handle cases of sexual misconduct.
Representing students from two major English universities in Montreal, the Concordia Student Union, CSU, and the Student Society of McGill University, SSMU, organized a walkout on Wednesday, April 11th to denounce how both universities handle complaints of sexual violence. On April 4th, the SSMU sent McGill administration an open letter calling for an external investigation into the way the university handles complaints against faculty members over allegations of sexual misconduct. After a lukewarm response from university administration, student groups at McGill are demanding reforms to the university's sexual violence policy.
I am believed.
I am believed.
I am valid.
I am valid.
I will fight for my sisters. We deserve better.
We deserve better.
Again, we deserve better.
We deserve better.
In 2014, an essay on the Hairpin website denounced sexual misconduct within the Concordia English department, but no concrete change was enacted. A year later, a handful of students sent a letter to the English department chair requesting a response which would, at the very least, provide students with information on sexual assault resources. They were told that nothing could be done. It is now 3 years later, and we are being told that there was never an open secret. In January, a confessed harasser wrote an essay forcing these issues back into focus. A few days later, CASE put out a statement outlining our 9 demands for the administration. To this day, none of those demands have been met. We still haven't received an apology, nor has the department acknowledged a pervasive problem, even though 3 professors have been suspended and 1 tenured professor is coincidentally on medical leave. Students have been pushing back against professors engaging in sexual misconduct for years. For a long time, students have had to rely on each other to create their own support system. This year, we have been fortunate in that, this time, the accusations have been heard in a variety of spaces, which in turn has allowed for more voices to be heard. However, invitations to be part of the administrative response have been limited and problematic at best. The investigative process has been kept vague, conflicting information has been given to students, and communications from the administration have been evasive and labyrinthian. Student representatives make up only 1/3 of the Concordia Task Force on Sexual Misconduct and Sexual Violence. It is also ridiculous that the CSU had to fight for its right to select these student representatives, and that the university demands that these students be in good academic standing. This only goes to show the university's ignorance of the extensive and damaging effects of sexual harassment and violence. To the Concordia administration, we cannot trust you until you take responsibility and acknowledge that sexual violence and abuse perpetrated by professors is a pressing problem that needs to be addressed. CASE believes that the English department wants change, and we are hopeful this change will happen, but we can only begin with listening to students. Therefore, we reiterate our demands for a clear and transparent investigative process, for the university to be clear about what constitutes legitimate and defensible evidence in the eyes of investigative authorities, and for faculty members to receive mandatory consent training, which addresses the risks of power and power imbalances inherent to student-professor relationships. There are no structures in place at Concordia that support the interests of survivors above and beyond their predators. These processes which do exist are critically lacking adequate choices for survivors to take action without facing further harm.
We demand from McGill University an acknowledgement of the severity and pervasiveness of this issue. We demand that an external investigation be launched into the Office of the Dean of Arts' handling of complaints. We demand that the university commit to making the policy against sexual violence truly stand alone. To McGill University, if you do not, by Monday, acknowledge that there is a problem with the existing climate, policies, and procedures on campus, and commit to launching an external investigation into the Office of the Dean of Arts, we will be reporting you to the Minister of Higher Education's office for being in violation of Bill 151. And we will ask Minister David to step in and intervene in the continued violence on this campus where you will not.
You are tuned in to Groundwire, your source for news from the ground up, available online at groundwirenews.ca and airing on your local community radio station. Now it's time for our community radio report. Gretchen King from CKUT files the following community radio report that explores a nonprofit application for a national multilingual news channel.
In a report on diversity in broadcasting in Canada, journalist Adil Brar, writing in this magazine, declared audiences are, quote, desperate for more representation, end quote. In recent decisions, the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission, or CRTC, recognized that there is an exceptional need to license a new multi-ethnic television service that can provide national news programming in multiple languages. This past week, the CRTC announced a public consultation to license and fund a new national multi-ethnic broadcaster. There are 8 competing license applications, including some by Canada's biggest media companies like Bell and Rogers. Applicants are seeking to win the new license and millions of dollars in public funds that comes with it. If licensed, TeleOne, a project by Independent Community Television, would become the first nonprofit-owned multi-ethnic national news channel in Canada. Groundwire spoke with Joneet Khan from ICTV's board of directors by phone from his home in Montreal about the group's application.
Our motto is all for one and Télé One for all. Notre devise est tous pour un, Télé Un pour tous. We're seeking a CRTC license to end the corporate control of ethnic broadcasting in Canada. Télé One is a non-profit television project by and for diverse communities. It is crucial that the CRTC hears from all Canadians who want a non-profit to run this new national channel.
ICTV's proposal for Télé One is the only application offering programming in ethnic, Indigenous, French, and English languages. Groundwire reached John Gagnon, also a member of ICTV's board of directors, at his office in Timmins. We asked John what change Télé One will bring to television in Canada.
We're at the forefront of a great opportunity that can showcase genuine multiculturalism in Canada due to the fact that Télé One is made up of new Canadians and the original peoples of this land. And we could be working side by side. This also gives our people the opportunity to greet the newcomers and introduce to them who we are, as well as the rest of Canada.
If successful, Télé One could be on air in 2020. In a press release issued by the CRTC, the commission provided the public 30 days to comment on the applications received. Visit crtc.gc.ca or www.teleone.ca for more information. Reporting for Groundwire, this is Gretchen King.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced on the traditional territories of the Mississaugas of the New Credit by the Groundwire National Coordination Team. Music this week was by Robbie Botos. As always, we thank our amazing contributors for making this episode possible. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca.